Wagwan, everyone. Welcome to Black Screen Global podcast. I'm Lucy and...
I'm Eugene.
Welcome, guys, to another episode. As you can see, that was a very disgusting Jamaican accent, but shout out to Jamaican people. It was you guys' independence this week.
Indeed.
So shout out to you guys. My life changed when I had patty, curry goat, oxtail. For a small island, you guys are very influential, like from music to food to pop culture.
It's a lot.
You're a very tiny little place. Like, it's amazing. So shout out to you guys. Shout out to the aunties. I don't like to be called aunties. I don't know why. But we say it as just as respect, you know, and that's it. But how are you, Eugene?
Lucy, I'm good. But and also, this is the first time we're actually recording in person.
I know.
Like, in a long
since,
time.
Since the first.
It's wild.
Since the first episode.
Was it the first or second?
No, since the first, because we did the trial, then we did another one.
Well, it's been that long, jeez.
And then that's it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because when we started a pod, for those who don't know, when we started a pod, that's when lockdown started.
Crazy timing.
And I remember Eugene messaging me like, so should we carry on? And in my head, I was thinking, no. But I was like, okay, you know what? Let's go. And now look.
This is what I'm saying. The growth.
It's been amazing. Thanks guys for listening and supporting, liking, sharing. It's been great. It's been honestly great. And even feels weird. Doing this specifically,
it actually feels bizarre. Literally in Lucy's like bedroom, which is wild. Like,
yes, guys, yeah. You know, anybody got time to be paying for no studio? You know, Brexit is real, trying to save some coins, but let's get started.
Yeah, I think it's only right we start by, well, yeah, just mentioning the legend that is Robert Ryland, or Bob Ryland, as he was known, who died earlier this week. At the age of 100, so which is just incredible, like to live literally. I think that's like literally everyone's like goal, like aspiration, like to 100%. live to 100. But yeah, even more significant than that, like he was the first black male tennis player like to play the sport, and obviously he grew up in a completely different time to the time we're in now, where like America was segregated, so you know, blacks weren't allowed to associate with whites, and you know, it was just a completely different world. Like, obviously things aren't perfect now, as we all know, but things are a lot better than they were back then.
Yeah, 100%. And it was crazy to find out that he was like in his late 30s.
Yeah, exactly. So
for him to like finally play,
I think he was 38 years old when he like was recognized as a professional, which is just like.
That
literally
is crazy.
Coming towards the end of like your career in terms of
which is more even inspiring, because he could have easily been like, F this, I'm not gonna do
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
So he opened doors for even, let's say, people like us, because look at the platform that we're actually, you know, we're talking about black tennis players, and who knows what would have been like. So shout out to him, may he rest in peace, shout out to his family, may they, you know.
Indeed. And I think it also it's important to not recognise, but yeah, like pay homage to
100%
people like that, because yeah, like he's a pioneer, like you can say he is. I think one of the quotes that I quoted actually was from the late Arthur Ashe, who said that his dream in tennis is to become good enough to beat Bob Ryland, because Bob Ryland used to actually coach or play with a young Arthur Ashe.
Oh, wow,
so
okay.
before Arthur Ashe like became the man he was. Obviously, and we all know what Arthur Ashe went on to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like just his impact. I think he also worked with like Venus and Serena as well, like a young Venus and Serena.
Oh, nice.
So he's like literally been in the game like for a long, long time.
100%, yeah.
And even like in his age, in terms of like when he was, well, you can say past it, he was still very active like in the scene. Like
I can imagine though, because you think about it, for him to start playing professionally at 38, like you wouldn't want to stop.
Exactly.
Like you just want to keep going and, you know, keep changing stuff. So
I also want to shout out Jordan Sanford, who wrote a really nice like obituary on the baseline.tennis website. And she also quoted referenced our post, our IG post. So yeah, thanks for doing that, Jordan. And it was a great piece. I did post it in our story as well, earlier in the week.
Yeah, it was a good piece.
Yeah, it was really, really
good. Check that out, guys.
Yeah, definitely appreciate that. So yeah, I think the next thing to talk about is tennis being back.
Tennis is back, guys. That's why I'm such in a great mood. That's why I did that disgusting Jamaican accent earlier. You know what I'm saying, guys? Like, I'm so excited. I know you're probably saying, Lucy, you're fake as hell, because a couple episodes ago, you were like, tennis should have come back. But you know what? I'm just admit, yeah, sometimes I'm a bit fake. Sometimes I'm scared.
Changing like the British weather.
And yeah. Like, I'm scared of coronavirus, but guess who's traveling this week? Me. But I mean, it is what it is, guys. Okay. I want my place to be safe, but at the same time, I'm so excited. I've been jealous of seeing football being back, where they're touching and sweating on each other. Basketball is coming back as well. NFL, they're trying to sort it out. And tennis, where you don't even need to really touch each other. Hello.
Yeah.
So tennis is back, Eugene.
No, good. No, listen, I'm you know me already. I'm excited. I'm ecstatic.
I know. Like, unlike me, you were excited about it.
I've been advocating for it to come back. So yeah. It's great to see. And I was following obviously Palermo, because the ATP, they're not coming back until later on this month. Mm. But Palermo was the first event to like restart the tour, or the WTA tour anyway, and that was earlier this week. And today being a Sunday, it's the final today. So it's Fiona Ferro versus Annette Kontaveit.
Kontaveit, yeah. I actually always say Kontaveit. Sorry. Is it Kontaveit or Kontaveit?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Mm. Well, this is Black Spring Global anyway, so.
So, yeah. But I was following Jasmine Paolini, the Italian.
Yeah.
She's top 100 now, actually, because she cracked the top 100 at the end of last year.
Okay.
So she played Daria Kasatkina, the Russian,
mm-hmm.
Who's like, yeah, well inside the top 100. Like, I want to say she got to the French Open semi-final a few years ago. So, like, she's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
That was Paolini's first opponent in the first round. So, on paper, Paolini probably didn't really have a chance against a player like that. Yeah. But she came out and won. Like, it was a three set epic.
My Twitter was active around that time. Like,
because I started watching. Oh, I watched the whole match. So it started like UK time, or no? Let's go Italian time. It started Italian time. It was the first match, the first evening session, because they play two matches per like session.
Right.
So two matches in the day session, two matches in the evening. So Paolini Kasatkina, that was the first match for the evening session. So I think they started at like 7 p.m. or like 8 p.m. Italian time into the evening.
And I think they're like 1 hour ahead of
exactly us, yeah. So long story short, that match, it went on for three sets, and it literally finished past midnight.
That's why I was confused. I was like, how is tennis still on in Europe at this time?
And for me, it was like, you know what? Like, I've being a fan of the sport, I was like, I've missed this so much.
I know. It's crazy. I was saying to myself, like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually miss staying up,
watching
matches and then being tired in the morning.
Because we're going to get to that later on. Yeah. But like, obviously, this being in Europe, like, the time zones are pretty much the same.
Exactly,
like,
so you wouldn't even think that you'd be dealing with that. Yeah.
But like you, like, I've missed that as well, like, mm-hmm. staying up for matches and, like, yeah, going to bed at like 3-4 in the morning.
Yeah,
and
watching
Serena, like in Miami,
or sleeping early and then waking up and then seeing that the match hasn't started because the match before that decided to go longer. Oh, I missed that struggle, guys.
But no, I'm glad it's back. I'm so glad it's back. But on to Paolini. Well, back to Paolini. So, yeah, she won that in three sets, and then she played Aleksandra Šašnjević in the second round, and Šašnjević, she was a qualifier. And she's a good player, to be fair. Like, her ranking's just, I think she's been injured. That's why she like had to go through qualifying. But yeah, that was pretty straightforward for Šašnjević. It was like straight sets. And watching that, I just thought to myself, you know what? Fair play to Paolini, because literally, although she did get it, she got a day off, to be honest. But there were a few injury timeouts, like in that match against Kasatkina. They both like had like strapping on like their thighs. I can't remember which ones, but yeah, there was like injury timeouts and like obviously
that's
the thing. That's the first like competitive match back, or tournament back. So players aren't going to be 100%, even though they've been working out and stuff. Yeah, and like,
it's not the same.
So I think that we should kind of expect that, like, going forward, like, for the first few.
Definitely.
And like, yeah, it's just part and parcel, I guess. But yeah, it wasn't much of a surprise to see Paolini lose, even though it was in straight sets. It was, yeah, and like I said, Sasnovich is a good player, so fair play to her on that. But yeah, like, it was just, I was just happy to see competitive tennis, like, back on the TV.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So yeah, very, very good to see that. So yeah, that was Palermo, and more like, kind of, I say, depressing news, Madrid was canned, so cancelled. And I guess, again, for me, that was expected because, like, cases have been kind of, there've been a lot of cases.
Quote unquote, back on a lockdown. Mm. Like, you can decide if you want to stay at home or not. Yeah. That's how they put it in. So even people who are from the UK who are, I think it's either they're no longer allowed to fly there, or you have to quarantine for 14 days when you come back from Spain at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Is one of those countries. So yeah, I'm not surprised by that. Anyways.
Because that's a Masters event on the men's tour, and like a Premier mandatory on the women's tour. Like, so it's a big deal, and it was kind of like, although it was inevitable, it was like, sad to see it go, but it's understandable because obviously you're probably going to get a lot of players like reluctant to take the chance.
Was that before or after French Open?
So before, it'd be before.
That would have been, you know, that'd been a great thing to get ready for. Yeah. So for now, French.
I think it's
because Rome. Already French Open, US Open is so tight.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of the issues that I kind of had, because it was like, well, players even
have time
to, like, adjust. To think. Yeah, so the fact that they don't have that Madrid anymore is going to be a little bit, tough.
I think Rome is still going to go ahead, and that's obviously just before the
French. And I don't know how's that going to happen. Yeah. Well, this tour went well, but we'll see how that goes.
So that's no Madrid. And on to the US Open now, like, a lot of wild cards were, like, announced.
Hello, wild cards this time. I was actually confused.
Because for me, basically, depending on the country, the wild cards are always awarded to, like, players from that country in terms of, like, the association. So with it being in the US, there are going to be the majority of players that will get the wild cards will be American players. And then they'll make exceptions for, like, as they did for Kim Clijsters and Andy Murray, because obviously their ranking doesn't permit them to get, like, automatic entry. But I think Tomaney tweeted something when the wildcards were announced that Andy Murray is going to be like a first, what's the word? I forgot the word he used. But basically, Andy Murray will automatically be in the first round anyway, so, like, he doesn't really need a wild card.
Right, okay.
So there'll probably be a men's wild card up for grabs as a result of Andy Murray just automatically being included in the men's draw. But on the women's side, I say, to be fair, the wild cards were exciting, like, from our perspective anyway, because...
Yeah, no, they were. I was just surprised by some of the names and... Because I think Osaka got one, didn't she? Or am I going crazy? No, she got it for
You're thinking Cincinnati, yeah.
I think that's what I'm getting confused. Sorry. I'm getting confused,
So we're talking US. Okay, US Open. US Open, so for that, like I said, Andy Murray, Kim Clijsters, obviously, and then the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So, exciting teenagers. Robin Montgomery, who we've spoken about in previous episodes.
Okay,
so
yeah.
She's 15. She got to the semi-finals, I want to say, at the Australian Open Juniors this year.
Nice.
So she's had a good like year. I think she won like a 125k event as well in March, I think, and that was like her first like senior tournament win. And also Whitney Osigwe, who's 18 years old, again, like a promising junior. I want to say she was world number one at one point. But yeah, she's also been awarded a wild card.
Nice.
And also Michael Moe on the men's side.
Okay.
So yeah, he's 22, I'm going to say. And yeah, again, like, exciting, like, young American tennis player. And obviously there's been, I think there were seven Americans on the women's side, seven Americans
on the men's side. I was just seeing an American flag everywhere. I was like, oh, when the KKK is this?
Well, I think that, yeah, like I said, that's just how it, that's how it, because like when Wimbledon comes around, for instance, like you always get like a load of Brits getting wild cards, like who aren't in like the top 200. So that's just how it goes.
Well, to be fair, they're also trying to fill up because there's a lot of players that can't, that don't want to fly to America. And I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I don't blame them. I just saw, this is not really the same thing, but it's worrying. I love you, American listeners, but why am I reading on the news that you guys are drinking hand sanitizers? Like, what's going on, fam?
To be fair, their president doesn't help.
I mean, like, what is going on,
less,
guys?
Less time talking about him, please.
Less time. Ghetto. The ghetto.
But yeah, on the withdrawals, so I think the highest profile withdrawal, even though for me it was like expected, was Rafa Nadal.
It wasn't expected for me.
Defending champ, really?
I was just, to be honest, I just did not know, because Nadal has been really quiet during this lockdown.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
He's only been talking about that his big ass boat, which looks amazing, by the way. Okay? That's the only thing this guy came to talk about and post his little cute little black box, do whatever he had to do. Those are the only thing that he's been doing is during this lockdown. And recently defending Djokovic, obviously. But that's why I actually did not know. Like, I was confused. I was like, I don't know what this guy is going to do. But then there was videos of him practicing on clay. So I was like, oh yeah, maybe he's not going to come. Because why are you on clay for?
So yeah, he's like one of the highest, I say one of, he is the highest profile on the men's side, obviously defending, yeah, he won defending last champ. Year. Exactly. But yeah, Gael Monfils, he's not going. Stanislas Wawrinka, he's not going. Nick Kyrgios, he's not going.
And he did a wonderful video. Shout out to my baby daddy, Nick. He did a wonderful video. And what I love about the video is that he was like, you know what? I respect everyone who's doing it. Like, from people, like, and not, he even acknowledged those who are not players, which I really liked. But he was like, I just prefer staying. I expected it anyways. Yeah. Do you get what I mean?
And like, that video was posted on the Uninterrupted, which is LeBron James. It's like, I want to say it's like a social media. But yeah, it's a media platform, basically.
Yeah, media platform, yeah. So yeah, shout out to him. That was really good.
On the women's side, so Ash Barty, currently the world number one, she's also not going. Alina Svitolina, she's also not going.
Yeah, I knew she wasn't, since Monfils wasn't going.
Of course, yeah. And Kiki Bertens. So they're just a few. A few more have also pulled out, but I think they are like the most prominent names, to be fair. So yeah, like, that means the US Open's going to look, not only will it be like, there'll be no fans, obviously, but like, yeah, some pretty high profile players, like, will also,
which is great. It's going to give the opportunity to, especially, I'm more focused on the ATP side, because it's always been a big three for the past, I don't know how long now, with the slam.
And we were saying kind of before we started, sorry to cut you, but yeah, Novak, he's most likely he is playing. So really and truly, he should take the title, but then
he should, but I'll be very disappointed in all of these men if he wins again.
Wow. Okay.
Because it's like,
it's too early to go predictions, but just for the sake of
if he wins, it'll be great.
I was gonna say, like, for the sake of this, like, argument, like, who would you expect to, like, maybe do it?
Team.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That, yeah, I think that's probably the most,
I think, sensible. Team will actually. Yeah. I think this is, and he's been active. He's been probably the most active player.
I think he's played literally every single exhibition.
He's been all around the world. He just needs to hope and pray. Probably needs to ask Djokovic for his natural water, for him not to catch anything before US Open happens. Because I am actually putting all my coins on him. I think he can win it.
Yeah. No, I hear that.
I think he can win it. Women's side, y'all know who I want to win, but you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's gonna be interesting.
I'm really looking forward. I'm really excited.
I'm because in Italy, so in Palermo, that they're allowing like a limited number of fans, so you do see fans like in the stands.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, it's weird, but then, I guess, if they're social,
but it wasn't full anyways. It was,
yeah, because I think they're trying to like implement social distancing, like, but then
it looked all right. It looked safe. It was better than Djokovic's tournament. That's what I'm gonna say for sure.
Full to capacity, but yeah, but like I'm saying, like, it's gonna be weird, like, to see empty stadiums.
They should do what the NBA was doing, the virtual thing.
Yeah, like, put up screens.
And I really hope that it also, like, oh, you see, like with football, they had like the noise of like the fake fans. Sound. Yeah,
I don't know about that, man.
I feel they should do that when they win.
It's like, because to be fair they did have that for the Ultimate Tennis Showdown,
of course, because you know Patrick is extra. That guy is hella extra. Shout out to Patrick though, I like him.
They had that for the Ultimate UTS, which I quite like that whole event. Like, we can touch on that a bit later on as well. I just think it's gonna be odd to kind of get used to, but because I'm so like, I'm gagging.
I think when I was watching Battle of the Brits, for example, like when it was like some of the matches that were intense, like I wasn't really, because it was the commentators as well.
Yeah. Well, but with the Battle of the Brits as well, like they kind of had, I guess,
the team, for the second one, the mixed one. The first one, they were indoors and it was quiet. True. Even though it was all right when the matches were like intense, but when they were doing the team thing, Union Jack and versus whatever, that was pretty cool. They literally had like everyone outside. And shout out to Heather, by the way, Watson. Oh, her performance,
unbelievable,
was really, really good.
Literally,
like,
undefeated in singles.
Yeah, like she was.
She showed levels.
She did. Mm-hmm. So shout out to her.
Big time.
It's gonna be interesting to see how they're gonna play.
I can't wait. I can't. I just pray, literally, like that. There's no kind of like upturn in like cases, and like for whatever reason the whole thing has to be cancelled.
Yeah,
like,
players, please be sensible. Please,
yeah, indeed,
be sensible.
Like, they are like strict, like it, well, yeah, strict.
I need them to move just like they do with NBA. I know they don't have NBA money, but that bubble thing.
They are doing a bubble, but then I think they have given players the option to like.
See,
do things outside, no, but then they have to have like security, like that they have to pay for and stuff like that.
No. Yeah. Have they not learned their lesson? Like, look how many players that we have like. Do you get what I mean? We're not doing this. Like, if they don't want to follow the bubble, then stay home. Yeah. Don't come and play. Do you get what I mean? We need the bubble at the NBA with that snitch hotline as well, so we can snitch. So they can snitch on which players out here gallivanting around. Like, this is a slam we're talking about. I think they should take that off. I think they should have a bubble and everyone should just stay in.
Yeah, no, I hear that. It's just, I think for some players, like, and I think it was, who was it again? Donna Vekic in Palermo. She was quoted, I think it was like a post or pre-match interview or press conference that she was holding, and she said she doesn't want to lie. I'm not quoting verbatim, but it was along the lines of basically, as much as they say there's like a bubble environment in Palermo, like there really isn't, because she said, oh, like I went out to eat like dinner like last night, and it's just like, why? Like, one, and I like Donna Vekic, but I was like, why do you, well, there's
you
no
mean?
Need to
what
say
do you
that.
Mean what do you like, mean no she should say it.
But
she definitely got in trouble. I bet she got in trouble.
I mean, I don't know, but like,
100%.
I just thought it was like irresponsible. Like, fair. If you've gone out and you've gone out to eat, that's on you. Like, don't kind of broadcast that, because that's kind of the wrong kind of message, basically.
Yeah, but that's what they're doing though. And that is the whole reason why I've been saying I'm not sure.
And this is Europe. Like, this isn't America.
That's what I'm saying. And look at the cases in America.
That's what I'm saying.
They're out here drinking hand sanitizers. And you want them to be walking around.
It's wild. It's actually wild.
In New York.
It's wild.
And I swear in New York, they even said that they might not allow people eating in a restaurant for like till like 2021.
Oh, wow.
Americans are actually, you guys better come and find your European bay and move to Europe, because you guys are actually like stuck in there, like I don't know how, boy. Ridiculous.
Wild. So yeah, that's the US Open, and I guess you can say a little bit of a roundup from this week.
All right, guys, so as you know, all is in our bag. We've got another interview again. We have Juan Del Brunner, who is an ATP and WTA coach, and he talks about his journey into the game, life on tour, the difference between coaching men and women, and so on. So stay tuned and listen to this great interview.
If you don't mind just kicking off, so your first memories of tennis?
My first memories of tennis, I was 7 years old. And we came down to visit my grandparents in a small town called Kissimmee, Florida, which is right in the heart of, I would say, Walt Disney. Okay. And I decided at that time to go roller skating on the tennis courts, which, you know, I knew I wasn't supposed to, supposed to be doing that, but I still did it anyway because it was more space for me to skate and not fall over rocks. And there was a gentleman at the time who said to me, look, you need to get off the court. And being a sassy little seven-year-old, I told him, you know, you don't tell me what to do. And I didn't realize that he happened to notice what the direction I came from, and he knew my grandmother. Okay. So he said, well, you have two choices. You can get off the court, or I can go and tell your grandmother. And you and I both know I took option A to get off the court. And yes, definitely. Because, you know, growing up, you know, as a 70s kid, my grandmother didn't play. So I started to cry. And he said, you know what? I don't want you to cry. I want you to come back at 12 o'clock with a packed lunch and, you know, have your trainers on. And I'm going to show you something. So I came back at 12. And he put a racket in my hand, which was my first tennis racket, the Bjorn Borg Dane. And I was a little taken back at first because there was a bunch of white kids out there and they're playing, and you know, I'm the only kid of color. But something about the game just it took over. Yeah. It really started to intrigue me. It, you know, I started to say, I can hit this ball, you know, and I'm faster than these kids. And I said, you know, this is fun. This is really fun. And you know, figuring out.
This was at 7 years old.
Yes, this was at 7 years old.
And the other kids you were playing with, were they of the same age or a bit older? Like
some my age, others older. Okay. But I started to see that I could keep the ball in just as well as him. I didn't have the proper technique, but I said, wow, you know, this is very, this is fun. So the gentleman at that time, his name is Mike Pertz, who I still keep in touch with to this day. He said, you know what, if you'd like, I have a little program. And while you're here, I'd like for you to just come in as many times as you want and play. And I went home and, you know, he said, you know, keep this racket with you. I literally slept with the racket. I didn't want anyone to take the racket from me. My grandmother told me about the, you know, the late, great Arthur Ashe and Althea Gibson, and that they were, you know, the pioneer black tennis players of that time.
Of course,
yeah. And how they, you know, how they just broke the color barrier for us. So I went library and I started to read up on them, and that really put my love for the game in overdrive. I started practicing. I went to the wall. I banged down the wall every day. One thing that Mike told me, he said, listen, the wall is your best friend. It doesn't argue with you. It always gives you the ball back. So, you know, use it. So I was there during the summertime from sun up literally to sundown. And I started to realize at that time too that, you know, those kids had money to pay for lessons. Yeah. So what I would do was I didn't quite get it so much, but I knew that, you know, my family didn't have a lot of money. So what I would do was I would go to the fence and I would sit and watch how they started to show the kids the techniques and what they needed to do. And I would watch, and then I would go back to the wall and I'd try my best to emulate what I saw. And I just kept doing that over and over and over. And Mike started to really notice that, you know, when I went to his little clinics, I was improving. He said, how are you improving? I said, well, I'm doing what you told me to do. I'm at the wall every single day. So that's where it all started.
So did you play like through school? So like junior high, high school, like
I did. As I started to get better, My parents decided to, well, my mom, because I was in a single parent home, my mom moved us down to Florida. And I was really happy with that because I could spend more time with Mike and the other kids on the court. So the only thing that he said to me at that time was, I will coach you if you keep your grades up and you really take this, you know, not as a job, but having fun with it. So little did Mike know that I was a straight A student. So I didn't have a problem with my grades. So I really kept my grades up. And I just tried as best I could. And people started to see me improving. So they started sponsoring me for small tournaments. Wow. And I started playing some small tournaments. And I started going pretty far, you know, in the tournaments. But as I got older, I started to really understand the racial tension, the barriers, the hurdles that I had to overcome, because I really looked around and I noticed that I was pretty much the only black kid playing back then.
Moving into your, like, adult years now, and your time as a coach, like, when was that transition? Like, when did you make that transition from, like, player to coach?
The transition from player to coach was during college. My teammates and I, we would play some of the, you know, back then it was called the satellite tournaments.
Okay, yeah.
So we would play some of the satellite tournaments, and I really started to realize that if you don't have the money and you're not training 5, 6, 7 hours a day, it's going to be hard to really compete at a high level. So I said to myself, you know what? I don't think that I will be a professional player, but I'd really, really like to get into coaching and try to give back to kids, you know, the same way people gave back to me. So that was an easy transition for me. I really started to get into just coaching lessons here and there while I was in college, you know, to make extra funds.
Okay. So just not to cut you, but what college did you go to?
I graduated from St. Thomas University. Okay. Here actually in Miami, Florida. And small Catholic University.
I take it there was a tennis program there as well.
Yes. Okay. Yes. When I was recruited, I came in, and to this day, we have the highest national ranking ever. We never had a national ranking until the team came in that we played with.
Okay.
And we got to 11 in the nation.
So yeah, the coaching transition. So from college, obviously competing, like you said, like in the satellites. What kind of step? What made you say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to basically pursue the coaching route now?
I started. Getting a couple of small gigs here and there.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed teaching the game. I enjoyed really pushing kids and adults to be better. And I started to realize that, you know what? This is my niche. I like this.
Yeah.
But where I started to question myself, do I want to just be a country club coach, or do I want to pursue coaching professionally? So at that time I was coaching, I met my wife, who is from Finland.
Okay.
And I met her during the time of coaching. And I mean, you know, I wasn't one who believed in love at first sight, but when I met her, she definitely changed my mind. And we had our first child, and we moved to Finland. And at that time, you know, I had really, really taken into coaching more, and really speaking to a lot of coaches who coached on tour, and just learning all the ins and outs of it.
How old are you at the time when you moved to Finland?
When I moved to Finland, I was 30 years old.
Okay. That's quite young.
Yes, I was 30 years old. But to be honest with you, again, as a black man, I wanted the opportunity to do something that a lot of Blacks didn't do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, besides yourself being that you're born in Europe. But I wanted to go to a different country. I wanted to learn the language. I wanted to, you know, see the culture. I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to see the world and not have any regrets. So I took that chance and I moved to Finland with my wife. And I met a player at the time named Juho Paukku,
okay,
who played. And if I'm not wrong, when I started with him and he came out of the ITS, I believe he had a winning record over Andy Murray. He never lost to Andy.
In juniors or?
Yeah, in juniors. Okay. In juniors. And Juho was someone who had, you know, I mean, just unlimited talent. But, you know, his father was a little tough, you know, to deal with. So a lot of people didn't want to take him on. So I came and I approached him and I said, listen, I would love the opportunity to work with you. Just give me that chance and let's see how far we go. You know, you have nothing to lose. At that time, he was around probably 700 in the world.
Okay.
He finally, after me being persistent, he gave me a chance. And that's when I started my professional coaching on the tour. We beat about four top 100 players. Together, we won several ITF and some Challenger Tour tournaments. Made several finals of Challengers. And that started to really open the doors for me. Being with him and traveling and just seeing how it is to be on the tour. And again, I will say it like this. I didn't realize that I was the only Black coach that I recognized at that time.
I could imagine. Traveling. Yeah.
No, there weren't very many.
I could imagine. How long were you with him for?
I was with Juho for almost 2.5 years.
Okay.
We got to close to top 300 in the world, but mind you, we did that on limited funding. Then I started with another young woman named Leah Kaukonen. She noticed that I taught differently than how the Finnish coaches taught. And I didn't know at the time that prior to her, you know, she was a Finnish woman. She also lived in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm.
So she was used to being different, and she took me on, and she did well. She was better doubles player, so she got to about top 500 in doubles, again with limited funding, and she had some injuries, but it opened more doors for me. People started to see what I could do, and I started working with other players, and I got the biggest opportunity for me was I worked at the Miami Open with Kaija Kanepi.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who was a former top 15 player in the world.
Well established.
And Kaija called me up and she had the Bryan's Brothers coach that she could have taken on. And she chose me to work with her for the Miami Open. And I was blessed to have that opportunity and to really feel like, you know, I was part of that elite group, so to speak.
You've mentioned there, like you've basically worked with both male and female players. Like, is there like any significant difference like in your like approach when it comes to like, you know, coaching and advice for like male and female players, or is it pretty much the same? Like if you can maybe break that down a bit.
It's definitely not the same.
Okay.
You have to understand that for me personally, I grew up with sisters. I never had a brother. So I've learned that emotions are very different when it comes to the male and female gender. I learned that with men, you know, I'm a guy's guy, so to speak. And with gentlemen, with men, when I'm coaching them, I'm very straightforward. I can look at them and say, look, man, you need to get your butt in gear and cut the crap, you know, and that's it. And I looked them right in the eyes and I said, I'm not BSing with you. Let's do this, you know, and they get pumped up with that. And I'm not saying with all women, but you have to get to know when you're coaching a woman, how they are, you know, how their moods are, when their emotions are fluctuating, and yeah. You have to be able to understand that and be able to coach with how they're feeling at that time.
Yeah.
But you also, you know, certain women are certain ways, you know, and certain women, they're like, look, we need you to be, you know, straight up with me. And I'm like, look, all right, you're being lazy. Let's get it together. Or there are other women, I'm like, look, you know, you have to do it this way. So it's finding that in between way of coaching with them, really understanding how their emotions are, but most of all, listening to them.
Yeah.
Listening to them, understanding them, because if you come in and you're like, it's my way or the highway, it's not going to work. You know, you really have to listen to them, get to know them as a person, because at the end of the day, they are athletes, they're professional athletes, but they're people.
Of course, yeah.
And they want to be listened to. So that's how I personally coach. I listen to them. I would watch how their emotions are on and off the court. And I just, I work through that.
No, brilliant. In terms of also like of, well, the level of player you've coached. So you've mentioned there you briefly coached you coached a junior, like kind of through his ranks, like in the juniors up to the pros. Again, like is the approach different or is it the same? Like what's that like in terms of like the level?
Well, I'm going to speak based on my opinion, okay. You know, and my experiences. I can't speak for anyone else but myself. When you are coaching at a high caliber of ITF levels and these kids are playing, you know, grade ones, grade A, you know, the big tournaments, Junior Wimbledon, Junior Australian Open, you're at that point, you're now, if they're choosing to go pro, you're basically grooming them on what they need to do or how to be to go to that next professional level. And it's not so much of techniques, it's more so of mentoring them and getting them mentally prepared. So they understand that when you leap from, let's say, college basketball or something like that, and you're going from the pros, you know, going to the pros, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with tennis. When you go up, it's a whole different ball game. These guys aren't making little calls. You can't make bad decisions because now you have lines judged. You have everyone that's there. You have chair umpires. You have everything.
Yeah.
So you're really teaching them, you know, that once you declare yourself pro, it's a whole different level. So you're grooming them. You're grooming them.
No, so that's a great way to put it, actually, because that's essentially what you're doing. Like you're gearing them up for, you know, that next level, I guess you can say. So it's exactly that. So no, that's fascinating. So yeah, the players how many players would you say you've worked with then, like in your career, like your coaching career, both on the ATP and WTA tour, like in total?
Boy, I've worked with Yana Korolyova, Anna Dadivova, Steffi Carruthers, you know, I wouldn't say I really worked with her, but I was, you know, blessed to work with her during that time. Okay. Kaya Kanepi, Juho Paukku, Lea Kaukonen. I would say that I've worked with probably 8 or 9 players that have played on the tour.
That's quite a lot, to be fair. That's quite a lot. Would you say now as well, like the game today, I guess you can, it's fair to say that players kind of have, you know, one kind of, or maybe even sometimes two, like two coaches they kind of work with like on a consistent basis. Like what do you think
some players have no coach at all. Like if you look at Nick Kyrgios, he's chosen not to have a coach. Like what would you say the right kind of approach is like for a player? Like, do you think it's important for them to have like one, you know, one solid coach like throughout, or do you think it's okay to maybe work with someone, you know, at different times of the year, depending on, I don't know, the surface or, I don't know, just their general kind of approach? Like what do you think the right kind of approach is?
Well, again, it's I'm going to say it like this. It's different strokes for different folks. Sometimes people need that because, again, my coach told me this. He said, tennis, you have to be a little crazy to play this sport. And you do. You do. I mean, you find yourself talking to yourself at times. You look like a nutcase on the court. And then you go back and look at the video and you're like, what was I thinking? You know, but there are certain people who can tap into certain places within you.
Yeah.
You know, there might be a guy that's very good at showing you, you know, the technique. There might be someone who's very good at really getting you to understand how to mentally stay focused on court. Mm. And there might be someone that just may be fun. And you need that fun person to be a part of your entourage. Yeah. That's going to help you to just stay level-headed. So, yeah, you know, I've had people tell me, they're like, man, you taught me how to play the game, but you also taught me how to enjoy the game. Because my thing is this, you get a chance to play a sport that not many people get the opportunity to play. Be blessed, be humble, be fortunate, and take that opportunity and run with it.
And again, yep, thanks again, Juandel, for your time. It was a really insightful chat. And yeah, guys, look out for the full interview because we'll be posting that like in its like entirety in the coming days. So that was literally just like, I guess you can say, a sizable snippet of the chat. But yeah, we spoke about a lot. Like I want to say it was an hour long conversation. So yeah, just appreciate your time, Juandel.
Content kings.
Yeah, so the next segment now, Lucy, It's not this time last year because we actually have real tennis to talk about.
Drum roll, please.
So, yeah, it's the Top Seed Open taking place in Kentucky.
And it will be starting, well, technically tomorrow, but technically today when you guys are listening.
Yeah, indeed. So... that's going to be huge. I'm so excited for that.
So excited.
So excited. So we've obviously got Serena Williams competing, and with her being the highest ranked player in the draw, she is the top seed. So Serena Williams is the top seed at the Top Seed Open.
That's a good one. Eugene.
We've kind of spoken about the players competing, I think we spoke about briefly anyway in the last episode. But yeah, the draw was released last night.
WTA.
And I think, yeah, Lucy had a lot to say about that.
Literally, when I saw the draw, I literally said out loud, for fuck's sake. I literally said it out loud. I get it. You know, you guys want to excite tennis and all, but really putting main all top players, a top seed.
So this is how, I'm going to give you the rundown.
Give the rundown, so, please, because I don't want to give it. I really don't want to.
So like I said, Serena being the top seed, so she's at the top of the draw. So she faces Bernarda Pera, who's another American. So that's Serena's first round opponent. And literally second lineup, Venus Williams versus Victoria Azarenka. And again, this is a first round matchup. So guys, the winner of that plays the winner of Serena.
You know what? They need to let Venus rest. It's not fair. How long have they been doing this to Venus as well? And this is not fair on Azarenka. First round and second round Williams. She's done at AFL.
So yeah, it's a pretty stacked draw, to be honest. Sloane Stephens, who's the seventh seed, she plays a qualifier. And qualifying is actually taking place like right now as we record. Jennifer Brady of the USA takes on Argel Heather-Watson. Whoop, whoop. And then, yeah, this is down, we're very deep into the bottom half now, and then you've got two qualifiers going up against each other, which is, that's quite nice for them, to be fair, to get through to the second round. And then you've got Coco Gauff. She's also taking on a qualifier. It's a pretty stacked draw, to be honest. A lot of Americans, like, but yeah, any draw that has Serena in there and Venus, it's like, wow, it's like show-stopping stuff.
Yeah, but I don't like how they did this draw, fam.
You're going to like it was like rigged. Like,
but you know what's so funny? But it is. it is. It's just like last year when they did the first round, Serena and Sharapova, US Open. Remember?
Can't say it was rigged. Obviously, like,
come on. Eugene, you want to tell me? Are we looking at the same draw? Are you actually looking at this? It's so funny. Even someone on Twitter even tweeted, you guys should even just put Venus and Coco again if you just wanted to like just fuck shit up. Like, you might have just done that. And they were right. Everyone... I mean, come on. Everyone was just like, these people are taking a piss now.
Because
come on.
That top half is stacked.
Look at the top half. Look at the bottom half.
Yeah.
Qualifier. It's stacked. What's that?
It's stacked. But, I mean...
I mean, it's great, but do you get what I mean? Because they were so busy just putting everything, boom, the top half like that.
Can you imagine Coco Gauff versus... Who could she play in the semis? So, yeah, Coco Gauff could play...
She can play Heather.
Yeah, I was going to say Heather Watson in the semi-finals, which would be mad.
And then, one of them can get probably Serena.
But
we might get Serena and Stevens, which we haven't had for a very long time.
So that's a possible quarterfinal.
That's a possible quarterfinal.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, yeah.
We haven't had that in a very long time, actually. Every time it's about to happen, they just...
Sloane's been active out here. Like, she's been playing...
Yeah, she's been active.
She played that exhibition before the World Team Tennis.
Yeah.
In... Where was it again? On the clay. Charleston.
Yeah.
That was like a little... She's
been playing. She's been playing. That's good. But, I don't know, man.
Because I
do you know what? I'm saying all of this, but I'm so excited. Like, can you imagine? One of the first matches I'm watching is... Venus and Azarenka.
This is what I'm saying.
I love Azarenka as well. Like, I love her so much. To me, she's a great player. She's a mum as well. I love seeing mums playing tennis. No, it's very inspirational as a woman for me as well. So I'm frustrated, but I'm excited at the same time. You know, they wanted to get them numbers up, get people watching it, you know, get people excited. I mean, it makes sense.
I think as well, like, because I think I texted you last night saying, like, predictions. And I made a mistake because I went in the original, like, show rundown that I sent you. I said, I'm going to say Venus, when really and truly I meant Serena to win the whole thing. And I stand by that, like, even before, because this is before...
Yeah, you better make it clear.
This was before the draw was made. Before I saw the draw.
I'm not going to say what I told you on my text. Because people are going to think that I don't rate Venus. And I do, guys.
Of course.
I do, but I'm not repeating on the pod.
But I
just in case she's listening.
I think, to be fair, they'd be liking posts out here.
It's true. But just saying, I love you guys.
I think it's just, you'll be mad to like bet against Serena. Like, at any time.
100%. I can feel it in my heart, though.
Yeah.
Because she's, you know, doing her press and stuff. You know, she's been sharing that, you know, she's very excited, you know, it was her first time staying home. She said this was her first time staying home for so long since she was a teenager.
Yeah, a lot of the players are saying that.
That is crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was saying, like, even a couple of weeks ago, I think this time Serena is, like, mentally, because I've always believed that ever since she came back, it's just been a mental block for her when it came to that winning her 24th. It's genuine because, hello, she was off and she was still hitting those finals.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? That's what I'm saying. It's not like she was losing first, second rounds.
Yeah.
Literally, she was getting to finals. Grand Slam finals. Mm. Something these girls have never even seen it before. They can't even spell finals. So that is why I was like, it's 100% a mental block. She spent time with her daughter, with her husband. Shout out to her husband, by the way. Ladies, never settle. I hate when people say this, but never settle. Why? Because her husband actually did create the gym and the court at their home.
Oh, really?
During like the whole lockdown. And it's very interesting to see how big players don't have a fucking call. But at the same time, it makes sense because they're never home. What's the point? If I'm home, I'm not trying to play tennis. I'm trying to chill.
I think this is really going to make people rethink that and think, you know what? Maybe I do need to have a court. Like,
I think maybe some of them are like,
just in case you have another case.
Yeah, because you know, the first time, the first big player we found out from was Nadal.
Yeah,
which was crazy to think. And Serena as well. I really thought all this time she actually did have a court.
Mm.
But again, these people are, they're never home.
Yeah,
they literally have a home for decoration. They're flying about.
Exactly.
I feel like this lockdown really made me realize how much these people are actually traveling.
Very active. Yeah.
And it's amazing how they do that. Time difference, different environment, and all of these type of things. So I think Serena looked very confident, very popped up. Like, she did mention as well that she was, you know, a bit concerned because obviously she has health, issues.
Yeah.
And she was saying that she was wearing her mask all the time, something that you people are not doing, Eugene. And
she's calling me out, you're like, oh, I'm not expecting that.
That's
cool.
Eugene might cut this bit out. But, yeah, but like a lot of people.
No, man, you know what? Lose that. That hit me, that one, you know. I walked up to your front door with my mask. Like, what more do you want from me?
Guys, it was so funny. Like, I opened the door, I saw Eugene with a mask. And he was still walking in with the mask. Cause I saw him wear it. I was like, no, it's fine. But the first thing I did see when he walked up, I was like, wash your hands, please. As you know. She was like, I don't even want to think about the negative. Because I'm a bit scared of she didn't really say she was scared, but she was like, she didn't really want to think of that because of her health and everything. But again, I think that's a reason why I feel like she's joining all these tournaments, because they had to sell to her to tell her we're keeping it safe.
Mm-hmm.
She is not willing to take the risk, especially for tennis. Yeah. If she didn't have a daughter and a husband, maybe she would be willing, but you know, now it's, her priority is her family.
I think, yeah, that's enough. Important thing you just said about looking to play or take the opportunity, because I saw, I think it was in The Guardian actually, again shout out to Tamani, the latest article that he'd written, he quoted basically her saying that she's looking to literally play every event this year.
She said that she might even be down to come to Europe.
This is what I'm
saying. When she said French Open, I was like, shit, I should have probably gotten a ticket. Fuck.
I think tickets are actually sold out.
Sold out, of course. These French people,
which is absolutely wild. But yeah, I think a lot of players are like either in the camp of, you know what, as soon as I have the opportunity to play, I'm playing.
That's it. 100%.
Whether I've got to go to America, Europe, wherever it is, there's a tournament.
Players like Serena has, you know, they have the funds to. She don't take a plane. Exactly. I mean, she took a private jet, and it's going to be, you know.
I think even Coco rocked up in a private jet.
Come on.
Because I see the bag set up like that now.
Hey,
like,
listen, it's different.
Fair play. I think I'm just excited to see tennis back, man. I think, obviously, the main priority for everybody is
safety.
Everybody remains safe and we follow precautions and
this is what
I'm saying. There's no reason why we can't finish the year. Obviously, a lot of tournaments have been cancelled, which is understandable. But the ones that are still looking to go ahead,
if sports like football can still be going on, we honestly have no bloody 100%, excuses.
100%.
So players, even if you're allowed to go out for dinner, stay in your bloody bubble. To me, it doesn't make sense, because if I'm a player and I've been wanting to play for so long and I'm playing, I won't risk going out. Do you get what I mean?
Exactly.
And again, a lot of these small players, these take the opportunity right now, because a lot of the big players are not about.
Not there, indeed.
You need to take the opportunity right now. Indeed. You know, and get your coins, get your money. The price is how much? 225,000. Hey, you guys got bills to pay. I know that little Wimbledon check was fine, but you got more coins to get, so don't mess it up.
I think that's a nice way to end it. So we've actually got tennis watch and appreciate back again. So
my sleeping pattern is gonna be messed up, but I'm so excited.
But we're all here for that. Yes.
I am all here for it. Tomorrow I'm gonna be chilling and just watching. And guys, we're going to be tweeting about it as well.
Indeed.
You know,
indeed.
So
Indeed.
Get ready. It's going our Twitter profile is gonna be very active. I'm gonna be active with the memes. You know me.
I was gonna say that's all Lucy's work.
That's all I do. That's how I communicate. I communicate with memes and stuff, and it's very engaging. So stay tuned, guys. That we'll be tweeting a lot about these stuff as well. That'll be really excited.
No, I can't wait, man.
This will be the first time.
I cannot wait. Yeah.
Especially in terms of the pod.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Shout out to us, first of all. Shout out to us for entertaining. High five, man. Come on, we made this. Look at this, guys. Like, no, it's actually amazing because when crazy. We started this pod,
it's wild. And even like the followers,
it got cancelled. Indian Wells,
like, have grown like so much.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow. I was not expecting that at all. Like, I thought, you know what? There's no tennis. Like.
Honestly, we pulled it off.
But yeah, we just kept going.
We kept going. We pulled it off.
I appreciate
Black excellence. Look at that.
I appreciate all the followers. Obviously, appreciate you, Lucy, as well, like doing this with me. So, yeah, guys, I think that's a nice way to end it. So, yeah, we look forward to watching Kentucky, Serena, Venus, Coco, Heather. Like, yeah, good luck.
Azarenka.
Sloane, indeed. Yes, good luck to everybody.
And next time we're on, we're going to be talking about tennis.
Indeed.
I'm going to do my Jamaican accent again.
So yeah, guys, thanks for listening, and take care until the next time.